Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1261, we present two stories by new Life Rattle writer, Bobby Popovic. Bobby Popovic's family immigrated to Canada when he was 6 months old. He was born in Belgrade, Serbia, in 1993, and has spent summers there visiting his extended family. Bobby spent part of his childhood in Mississauga, moved to Milton for his high school years, then returned to Mississauga for his ongoing studies in English, philosophy, and writing. Bobby's hobbies and passions include reading, writing, listening to music, and playing guitar. Bobby Popovic's writing comes across as quiet. He doesn't, thankfully, go for the overdramatic, although his stories are serious and could easily lend itself to the exclamation. It's this refusal to be sentimental, to simply describe, that gives Bobby Popovic's stories such poignancy and makes them so effective. In tonight's first story, during their lunch break, two boys decide to take a hike and eat down at a ravine, which is forbidden to students. They have an unexpected encounter. Let's listen now as Bobby Popovic reads The Ravine, tonight on Life Rattle.
The Ravine by Bobby Popovic. See that line on the concrete just above the water line? Adam asks and points. I heard that if the water goes an inch over that line, then we all get to go home. Nah, it has to be at least 5 inches over. Then it gets pretty close to flooding the school, and so they close it down, I say. It almost happened before, I remember. The ravine runs alongside us on the other side of a chain-link fence. Damp and dark concrete walls line the ravine, and slope inward and down towards the bottom, making a V-shape. The grooved line that Adam points to lies about midway down. The water's higher than usual, but still about 2 inches short of the mark. A light rain sprays as we slosh our way over the freshly fallen leaves, shades of orange and yellow littering the ground in a colorful mosaic. Above, the trees sway in a still warm autumn breeze and gently send more leaves, whirling and dancing to the ground. Adam leads the way through the forest. The hoodie of his thick blue sweatshirt covers his head, and a lunchbox hangs from his backpack. Our running shoes slime with fresh mud. We reach a spot where the fence ends, and we can now climb down to the wall of the ravine. Adam stops, turns, and faces me. His hoodie squashes his gelled, spiked hair. "I'll go first," he says. "Then you can throw me your bag. I'm a better jumper than you anyway." I don't complain. I already know what it's like to fall in. When Adam and I came here after school last winter, I tried to skate down the frozen ravine, only to find that the ice was much thinner than I had anticipated. I cracked through the ice and into the freezing stream underneath. Minutes after I managed to get out, my clothes had frozen stiff into the wrinkled patterns that they had before I'd fallen in. I take off my bag and watch Adam skillfully sidle down the concrete walls with his legs spread wide and locked for support. He looks like a soaked spider trapped on the side of a drain. When he reaches the bottom of the wall, Adam takes a deep breath and lunges across the water with ease, landing on the opposite side. "All right," he calls back to me. "Toss me your stuff." I throw him my bag and watch him drag all of our things onto a grassy clearing. I cautiously crawl down the wall and reach the bottom. Although not very deep, the water is incredibly fast and could easily drag a person along after a rain. I look down at the muddy brown torrent, take a deep breath, and prepare to jump. "What the hell? Gross!" Adam shouts suddenly. I freeze in place and snap my eyes up to him. Adam bends over something that I can't see and covers his mouth. "Jesus, man," I yell. "You almost made me fall in." "Sorry, man," Adam laughs. "There's, like, a dead beaver or something in our spot." I clutched the wall to keep myself from sliding in. "What do you mean, a dead beaver?" I take another deep breath and leap over the roaring rush of water. My feet thunk against the concrete on the other side, and I grab the wall for support. "Just lying here, dude," Adam says as I scramble to the top. A dark brown form lies on the grass in front of him. I instantly turn away. "Come on," I tell him. "I don't want to look. Let's just eat somewhere else today." "You don't have to tell me twice." We find a quiet patch of grass under a large oak tree further down the river. Here, the ravine widens and slows to a lazy trickle. The concrete walls stop a few meters behind us and give way to natural rocks and soil. "At least the rain stopped," I say. We sit quietly under the tree and eat our lunch. Adam would often pull out a deck of cards when we came back here, and we'd play blackjack or poker. Sometimes we even gambled our snacks if one of us got a bad lunch. Today, however, we're content to just sit and watch bubbles form in the river and be dragged slowly away by the current. "Hey, Adam, what time is..."
"Shh!"
Adam cuts me off. "Quiet. Somebody's coming. I hear voices." "Oh, shit," I whisper. I stuff my lunch bag into my backpack and scramble behind the oak tree and beckon Adam to follow. We sit with our bags in our laps, hiding behind the single oak tree, desperately trying to hold our breath. "If it's Mr. Martin, I'm going to flip shit," Adam whispers. "I know," I reply. "Didn't Jamie have to call his parents last week for getting caught here during break?" Adam puts his finger to his lips. I hear it too, the rustle of branches and the dim murmur of voices above the sound of the river. I wait in silence. To my dismay, the voices grow louder. "Yeah, man," a deep voice says. "It was just across this spot here." Someone else laughs. "So gross, man. This'll be nuts, though," a third voice says. "Take out your camera." Adam lets out a sigh and looks at me, relieved. "It's just Nick and his buddies, dude," he says. "I'd recognize those stupid voices any day." I untense my shoulders. Nick's an idiot, but no one to be afraid of. He's probably with his friends Tyler and Tyler. I make to stand up, but Adam pulls me back down by my arm. "Quiet," he says. "I want to see what they're up to." Adam beckons me to follow him and peeks out from behind a fork in the tree. "Check this out." He moves and lets me look through the fork. Three of our classmates make their way through the forest on the other side of the ravine and reach the area where we had crossed. Nick wears a stained hockey jersey that looks three times his size, a black baseball cap turned sideways, and thick gray sweatpants. His left hand holds a small digital camera, and his right hand grips what looks to be a can of scented body spray. Tyler 1 and Tyler 2, as Adam calls them, trail behind. They both wear oversized hoodies and jeans. Tyler 1 swings a metal baseball bat at his side, and a half-smoked cigarette hangs from Tyler 2's mouth. "What's going on?" Adam asks. "Are they going to cross?" "Yeah, I think so," I reply. Nick already makes his way down the concrete wall, while the two Tylers wait at the top with his things. He leaps over and rushes towards the brown furry mound in the grass, holding up his sagging pants as he runs. "It's still here," he exclaims. The Tylers laugh. "Sick, no way," Tyler 1 says. They both cross and then huddle around the dead animal. I force myself to look down. It's some sort of muskrat, with its mouth slightly open and its eyes closed peacefully as if at rest. "Oh no," I mutter. "What's up?" Adam says. He pushes me out of the way and peers through the fork in the tree. His eyes widen and his eyebrows shoot up in horror. "What?" I say. "What are they doing?" A low thunk resounds through the air. It almost seems to shake the leaves around me. Thunk. I heard the noise again, followed by laughter. Adam puts his hand to his mouth. "Jesus," he says. "They're beating the shit out of it, dude." Thunk. I feel sick to my stomach. "Take a look." I look. Thunk. Nick raises the metal bat for another strike as Tyler 2 films the beating of the dead muskrat, whose one side is already disfigured and lumpy from the abuse. Thunk! The bat comes down hard and fast, smashing into the animal's side, and I see ripples in its liquefied chest. The ribs break. All right, it's softened up enough, Tyler One laughs. Let's cook this thing now. What did he just say? Adam asks. A moment later, and I realize what Tyler means. Nick holds out the spray can and puts a lit cigarette in front of the nozzle. Stand back, boys. Nick releases the spray, and flames burst from the can in a great cascade of yellow and blue. Breathless, I watch as Nick brings the flame closer and closer to the muskrat. Adam stands up and peeks around the tree. Jesus, he whispers. Suddenly, a shrill voice sounds from across the river. Hey! My head snaps sideways. A girl about our age stands on the other side of the ravine. She stomps a foot forward and crosses her arms. What the hell do you guys think you're doing? She yells. Her eyes dart from Nick and his buddies by the muskrat to me and Adam by the oak tree and then back to Nick and the Tylers. Oh, shit. He lowers the spray and lets the flame die out. Andrea, what are you doing here? I'm going back to school from my lunch break, which I actually signed out for, she replies. What are you doing here? Nick glances at the muskrat, then looks at the Tylers. You were about to burn that beaver, weren't you? Andrea, take a chill pill, Tyler 2 says. It's dead. I don't give a shit if it's dead, she cries out. It was a living thing. See if I don't tell the principal what all of you are doing. Andrea walks off into the woods, leaving me and Adam half exposed behind the oak tree, and Nick and the Tylers silent by the muskrat. Tyler 2 takes out another cigarette and lights it. Well, fuck, he says. That bitch is going to rat us out, eh? Nick snorts. More like musk rat us out, right? Tyler 1 says, and laughs at his own joke. Like I give a shit. He spits on the grass by the muskrat. And what about those two tree humpers? Tyler 1 points in our direction. My heartbeat almost stops. I swallow hard and take a deep breath, then come out from behind our hiding place. Adam follows. Well, I don't know about you guys, Nick says to us with a smile, but I'm not heading back to class just to be called down to the office. I hear that, Tyler 1 says. They start towards us. I tense up. My arms straighten and my hands curl into fists. Adam shifts nervously beside me and plays with the strap on his backpack. See ya, boys, Nick says when he reaches us. He pats me on the shoulder and he and the Tylers walk off into the woods. I let out a deep breath. Adam nods. He shuffles off ahead of me and leads the way. We hop back across the ravine and make our way towards the school. The muskrat lay still in the grass behind us, its fur singed and smoking, its ribs a pulpy mesh.
That was The Ravine, written and read by Bobby Popovic. Our narrator in tonight's second story, Metalworks, attends a patio house party hosted by an old high school friend that he once jammed with, and learns about their very divergent paths to university. Let's listen now as Bobby Popovic reads his story, Metalworks.
Metalworks by Bobby Popovic. I hear there's going to be a get-together at Alex Hickey's house. Adam tells me about it on Facebook. I decide to go. I bring some cold cans of beer and a little bit of pot. I know we can smoke in his backyard because his parents won't be home. Even if they were, his dad wouldn't care. He's actually done drugs with his own son and more than just weed, if what I've heard is correct. But his mom is a different story. She gets really angry every time she catches him smoking weed. Hickey and I were best friends in grades 10 and 11. We started smoking pot together for the first time in the 10th grade. I used to go to his house with my guitar and we would smoke a joint or two and jam. We'd blast Tool, Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Alice in Chains, or Nirvana, and play along with the songs. We came up with our own riffs too. I was always jealous at how natural, fluid, and dynamic Alex improvised. The songs he wrote were fantastic, his passion for music huge. When I once asked him what he had planned to do after graduating high school, Hickey told me he was going to move to British Columbia and attend school for sound engineering and music. BC apparently has great pot. We both laughed about that. We were basically potheads, but I slowed down after grade 11. Alex didn't. And after that, we hung out only once in a while. Adam picks me up at my apartment and we drive to Hickey's party. I don't know what to expect. I'm heading into my second year of university in September. That means I haven't seen Hickey in over a year. We arrive around 10. We make our way down the side of his house and unlatch the wooden gate to his backyard. His house is really big and really nice. The backyard has a tiled patio area and a large open pool that shimmers in the moonlight. I don't see anyone in the pool, but I hear hurried whispers coming from the small shed in the corner of the yard. I think they must be having a smoke, so I set down my backpack, unzip it, and take out a can of beer. Somehow, it's still cold. Adam heads to the shed, and I follow. Inside, I see three people huddled around a workbench. A laptop sits on top and plays Led Zeppelin. A dull yellow lamp, a few colored glass pipes, and a pack of rolling papers lay beside it. My eye catches two short lines of white powder sitting on top of an open DVD case. "Who the fuck is that?" says Hickey, sounding startled. He spins around and jumps in front of the lines of coke to block their view. His curly afro remains as long as I remember it, but his beard has grown out and looks almost half a foot long. He wears an Iron Maiden t-shirt and torn jeans. "Adam, what the fuck, man?" he says. "I didn't even know you were coming, let alone bringing people. This was supposed to be a small fucking thing." I swallow hard, my eyes darting to the powder on the table and up to my friend's face. I can't tell whether he's used yet. "Whatever, man," he says. "You and Bobby are cool to stay. If you invited anybody else, though, you're all out. My next-door neighbor is a firefighter, a huge buzzkill. He threatened to call the cops when he saw our plants growing in the corner garden. I don't even want to think about what he'd do if he knew we had coke here." Ryan and Mike, in the shed with Hickey, laugh. My heart pounds. I try and act natural. I've never seen hard drugs before. The night goes on. I have a few beers and a few bowls from Hickey's bong. I decide to leave the shed and sit down on a chair on the patio by the pool. I see Alex snort two small lines of coke with a rolled-up $20 bill. Ryan and Mike have some, too. Alex lights a cigarette and sits on the edge of the pool, his feet hanging over the edge. "I fucking hate that taste you get in your throat after you do coke, man," he whispers to Ryan, who sits across from him. Alex horks on the grass and takes a drag from his cigarette. The only difference I can see in him after he hit the lines is that he talks a bit faster and he shakes his right leg a lot. "I know, man, it sucks," says Ryan, puffing on a small green pipe. "Hey, Bobby," Alex says. I look up. "Yeah? Come here, man. I haven't seen you in fucking forever. Join the conversation." I drag my chair over and sit beside him. "What's new, man?" I take a sip of my beer. "Absolutely nothing," I say. "Same shit. Found a summer job, finally. I'll be going back to uni in September. How about you?" "Just been working a shit ton," he replies. "I'm at CarMax, doing repetitive manufacturing stuff. Got a new car. I don't know if you saw the Civic sitting in the driveway. I'll be starting school this fall, too." I can't hide my surprise. "Really?" I say. "What are you going into again?" "I got into a music course thing called Metalworks," he says. "It's all about, like, music production and improvisation and history and shit." "Oh, that's awesome, man," I pat him on the back. "Congrats." "Yeah, thanks," he smiles. "We still gotta jam more often, though, asshole. Come to Milton more and we can..." "What the fuck, Ollie?" Alex suddenly shoots out of his chair and drops his cigarette on the ground. His little brother, Oliver, has come out of the house. He's still in high school, grade 10 or 11. Alex stomps towards him and points at the back door. "Get the fuck back inside, alright? I told you tonight you can't chill with us." "But I'm just gonna smoke a bowl or two, then play some Xbox," Oliver says. "Who gives a shit?" "No, I told you, and you agreed. You can't be out here tonight." Defeated, Oliver trudges back inside. Alex walks back and collapses into his chair. He digs his pack of cigarettes out of his jeans, takes out a smoke, and lights it. I can see Adam and Mike's heads poking out of the shed to see what the commotion was about. I don't need him seeing this shit, says Alex, waving his hand towards the shed. He already smokes weed. I don't want him seeing me do anything else. He takes a drag of his cigarette and holds the smoke in. Let me tell you something, man. Alex points his cigarette at me, and smoke pours out of his mouth as he talks. Stay the fuck away from strong drugs. You don't have to tell me, man, I respond. If the drug's white, it ain't right, mumbles Ryan. Exactly, Alex says.
That was Metalworks, written and read by Bobby Popovic. That concludes Life Rattle number 1261. My name is John Dunford. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune in next week to hear more new stories.